happening now, and we'll have live analysis. The Flynn case is before the full D.C. appeals court. We'll talk about that and more today on Jay Sekulow Live.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
General Flynn is a defendant without a prosecutor in litigation now without any controversy between the actual parties to the case.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
Instead of promptly granting dismissal as required on this facts as a matter of law, Judge Sullivan denied two defense motions opposing any amicus at all, appointed Mr. Gleason to usurp the job of the prosecutor, raised a sword of perjury and contempt charges over Flynn's head, and impermissibly sallied forth to right the wrongs he perceived.
And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
Welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. So as we're coming to you live right now, Mike Flynn, his case is before the full en banc panel of the D.C. Federal Court of Appeals. It's 10 judges because one judge had to recuse themselves. And so right now we've heard from Mike Flynn's attorney, Cindy Powell. We're hearing currently it's the Department of Justice attorney, Jeffrey Wall, who's a deputy SG. And then it will be the attorney for Judge Sullivan, Beth Wilkinson. It was supposed to be 20 minutes each. This started at 9:30 Eastern time. Now, you know, it's noon Eastern time, and they have not yet gotten to the third, I mean, I'd call him litigant. And to me, all that they've been talking about is mooted out by the fact that he's even a litigant in this, and there's a rule, and they say they wanted to brief on it, but they haven't brought it up yet, that U.S. Code 28 U.S.C. 455, Dad, which says, yeah, you're disqualified if you are a party to the proceeding.
Well, here's what's happened. First of all, we have not yet heard questioning aimed, and this is important to understand, we haven't heard questioning aimed at Judge Sullivan. His lawyers are up next as we're coming to you live. So we're monitoring that here in our studios. But that is what is going to happen. So the judge will, his lawyers will be questioned. So maybe the issue of disqualification comes up then. But it's interesting here, Andy, and I thought this was really important, that Sidney Powell, and it was a very effective line, said, this is a prosecution without a prosecutor.
Well, that's exactly right, Jay. We have no prosecutor. The Attorney General of the United States has decided to dismiss this case, but the judge won't do it. So you have a criminal prosecution, and nobody on the other side is the solicitor. Nobody on the other side is the district attorney. Nobody on the other side is the U.S. attorney. We're prosecuting a defendant with no prosecutor except Judge Emmett Sullivan. He's the prosecutor in the case.
Which, is, of course, is never supposed to be the way it is. What kind of attention, Than, is this getting up there?
Yeah, quite a bit, Jay. I mean, especially as it relates to all of the broader investigations going on. And I think it's important to put this against the backdrop of both Chairman Graham and Chairman Johnson continuing to issue subpoenas of the FBI for documents related to the case. Jay, of course, all of it is overlaid against the list that we already know of people who requested an unmasking of General Flynn. And even though this case isn't directly related to that portion of it, we have to remind listeners just how widespread this was. The very last name on that list was Joe Biden, after that meeting inside the White House. So, Jay, all of those things overlay together as you look at the entire story.
You know, I look at this, too, and again, we've only got about a minute before we go into our next break. We're taking your phone calls, this 1-800-684-31, is how some of the judges on this court, when they were questioning Sidney Powell, were trying to justify, in a sense, Judge Sullivan's move, which we've talked about how unprecedented it is, to bring in his own attorney to argue against the U.S. government's position.
I still can't.
And so
one.
I want to play that exchange for you when we come back. When we come back from the break, because that was, it is very unique. And again, I think this is a tough en banc panel for Mike Flynn, unless they really get to that disqualification issue and that's how they handle it. But again, we're taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. As Than said, you know, the ACLJ played a role in this throughout the process, through the FOIA work that we've done, through the uncovering of the unmasking and pushing for years on that. Support the work of the ACLJ. Donate online. Be part of our matching challenge at ACLJ.org. Double the impact of your donation. That's ACLJ.org. We'll be right back.
Hey.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our matching challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Jay Sekulow Live. I want to play this exchange. This is interesting. It's the first exchange that really brought up this idea that we've talked about with Andy, we've talked about my dad, we've talked about with all of us, how we've never seen this before where a judge brought in somebody who tried to, remember he never got to that point where so far has not been allowed to yet, tried to bring in a former judge, Judge Gleason, now in private practice, to argue a position that he wanted against the U.S. government and against another party in the case, Mike Flynn. So you have an Obama-appointed judge on the Court of Appeals, Judge Pillard, asked about that to Sidney Powell and whether or not that was, did that show that there was some kind of, this was not on the disqualifying because he's a party, but that he was no longer impartial. Take a listen, Byte 54.
So Judge Sullivan showed bias by appointing an amicus, but Gleason wasn't being chosen as the judge. He was invited to argue one side in an adversary system. An adversary system is so that we get the law right. It's the core of any judge's job to assess cases in view of the strongest arguments that can be made on both sides. And your position is, no, he can't hear both sides on the law. He has to drop the case like a hot potato without adversary briefing an argument. That's your position.
There is no provision for amicus in a criminal case in the federal district court, and certainly not to take the position of the government when it has decided to drop the case. When the government signs off, the case is over. The Article III branch cannot make the Article III branch prosecute a case.
Yeah, I mean, Sidney is precisely correct. I mean, there should be no real discussion on this point, although there was, because this is a very liberal court these days. But the fact of the matter is this idea that the prosecutors drop the case so the judge, I mean, think about this, the judge appoints a retired judge to serve basically as a special counsel.
Yes, and the judge who asked the question is admitting that, is saying to keep it adversarial, to bring in somebody to argue against the U.S. government and really to try and prosecute, to keep the prosecution going in Mike Flynn. And just to simplify this to people, what Sidney Powell, Mike Flynn's attorney, said is, no, the judge doesn't get to bring in somebody to keep a prosecution going. If the government, if the prosecutors say, we're not going to prosecute this anymore, that's it for the judge. The judge has no more role to play. He cannot bring in someone to keep a prosecution going. That's not his role in the Constitution. The fact that this judge, which, you know, we knew this court is very liberal, is trying to justify these decisions by Judge Sullivan, when I think even deep down they know it's absurd, but they're trying to justify these decisions saying, well, why can't they question it? Aren't they want the interest of justice? And Sidney Powell answers with the correct legal argument back, which is there's nothing more to argue in this case because the prosecutor said we're not going to bring charges.
You know, Andy, in the Supreme Court practice that's called confession of error, sometimes a case will go up and the government, it doesn't happen all the time, but it happens, you know, every couple of sessions, the government will now, after looking at the case, will say, we confess error. We should not have brought this case in the first place. And that is the end of the matter. And then Justice Ginsburg wrote a unanimous opinion for the Supreme Court where she said it's the job of the litigants to frame the issue, not the court.
Well, that's true, Jay. Justice Ginsburg said it is not the job of a district judge to sally forth every day looking for wrongs to right. It is the job of the district judge, the trial judge, to umpire proceedings. And Judge Sullivan has overstepped those bounds terribly in this case. He has decided that this prosecution is not going to be over. That's not something that an Article III judge has the right to do. He has chosen to pick former Judge Gleason to advocate on behalf of the government. Well, guess what? The government doesn't need an advocate. The government has already decided it doesn't want to prosecute Flynn because of a variety of reasons, including the fact that we have violated Brady and failed to disclose material that could exonerate him. And that is a decision the Attorney General has made. That ends it. You don't bring in another person, or the judge certainly doesn't bring in another person to say, well, let's talk about that. Let's have a little adversarial proceeding and discuss that and see really whether, in fact, the Justice Department is right or wrong. Judge Sullivan has way overstepped his bounds.
We've got another angle from the D.C. Court of Appeals. You might remember Merrick Garland's name. So Judge Garland, he's looking at, and you've got some of these other liberal judges on the court trying to look at the theory of, really, this shouldn't even be before us yet. So the three-judge panel shouldn't have made a decision because Judge Sullivan never made a decision. Sidney Powell answers this very clearly because that by his actions, Judge Sullivan made a number of decisions in this that made it ripe for appellate review. Take a listen, Bite 17. This is Merrick Garland to Sidney Powell, Flynn's attorney.
Unless it was a separation of powers case about the core powers of the executive branch, and the Supreme Court had decided that the executive branch has this power. The plaintiffs were claiming that it doesn't. And the judge has not made up his mind yet. Wouldn't you agree that still the district court has to make the decision before you can appeal or before you can seek mandamus or before you can do anything else?
Well, he's effectively made a decision here. He denied two motions opposing any amicus at all and denied our request that the motion to dismiss be granted before he even appointed Mr. Gleason and then started the whole process that intrudes into the Article II executive power that he simply cannot do.
So, I mean, there you go. It's this question back. He's made multiple decisions, denied two motions opposing amicus at all, denied the request that the motion be granted, and that was before he appointed. Then he brought in this other issue that was, I think, ripe for legal review is, can a judge at the district court level bring in somebody to argue a position? I mean, so I think it has every reason to be before an appeals court panel, but you see how these now, yeah, the en banc panel, they're looking at multiple ways to try and either send this back to Judge Sullivan.
Yes.
But we still have not yet gotten to whether or not it should go back to Judge Sullivan or not. That's something that still, I think, is hanging out there. Is Judge Sullivan going to be the judge who gets this case back, or has he disqualified himself?
I want to ask our production staff to be monitoring very closely to see if, because the argument's going on as we're live here right now.
His counsel's finally now going up.
His counsel's finally up. To see if there's any questions that arise involving disqualification of the judge on the basis of bias. Remember, that was an order that the court issued on its own motion saying we want to discuss that at oral argument, which was a signal we thought that they were going to get rid of this case. But it has not thus far come up. I want to go back to Than, if I can, for a minute. And Than, we've got the hearings that are going to be set by Lindsey Graham, the Judiciary Committee. Will it address these issues?
Yeah, I think it will, Jay. I mean, there's going to be a little bit of a systematic approach, a sort of a step-by-step approach. But I think the two significant developments that tell us that this will be a part of it, one from Chairman Graham, one from Chairman Johnson. Chairman Johnson, who is the chair of the Homeland Security and Government Oversight Committee, has issued a subpoena for documents to FBI Director Christopher Wray, not for testimony, Jay, but for all of the documents related to Crossfire Hurricane, which, of course, Crossfire Razor and the investigation into General Flynn was a subpart of that. And then the second one, Jay, Chairman Graham has concluded and made a very, very powerful statement that he believes that the FBI has lied directly to Congress about the veracity of the Steele dossier. And, you know, Jay, so many of these players, most notably Jim Comey and Peter Strzok, are involved in all of these different investigations. So I think what you start to see and what Chairman Graham is starting to see is a pattern and a practice of the same main players. And we're talking about the highest echelon of the FBI having a narrative here, Jay. It was not a following of the facts. It was a decision to go after the Trump campaign and then make every other thing meet that narrative. So you've already seen Rod Rosenstein and Sally Yates testify in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee. I think they will continue to work through those 53 subpoenas. And now there's a second committee that is looking at this. And Jay, I would tell you the one other thing here that I think you're going to start to hear from the United States Congress. They are going to start to get jealous about their powers under separation of powers under the Constitution. There is a specific reason that an Article III judge is not granted prosecutorial powers like we're discussing here today. Why is that reason? It's because they are not accountable to the American voter like the Article I and Article II branches are. You're going to start to hear that argument more and more.
But you know, Andy, I was just thinking about this. So Beth Wilkinson, well-known criminal defense lawyer in Washington, D.C., good lawyer, is arguing on behalf of Judge Flynn. So Judge Flynn is represented by Judge Sullivan. So, which makes him as a party, which means that under the rules he should be disqualified. So this whole process points to the awkwardness of letting the litigation go in this way.
Well, I mean, why haven't we heard that so far? And
I
think
don't know.
We're going to hear it. We're going to hear it when they talk about Petitioner Sullivan, because that's what I'm calling him, Petitioner Sullivan. He is a party to this case, and they finally, I trust, will get to. Question Ms. Wilkinson with respect to her client and how he can continue to be a judge in the case when he has petitioned the embanked panel to sit and to hear his case and has made all these decisions that really are prosecutorial decisions and not decisions of a neutral arbiter. And that, I trust, we're going to hear in the last half of this proceeding.
Folks, when we come back, we will continue to take your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110, so we'll start taking more of your questions at 1-800-684-3110. Remember to support the work of the ACLJ. This is a matching challenge month. You can double the impact of your donation by donating online at aclj.org. That's aclj.org. Double the impact of your donation to the American Center for Law and Justice. It's even how we bring this broadcast to you every day. aclj.org. We'll be right back.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our matching challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. I want to play this exchange so we're going to get to phones. 1-800-684-3110. There's a lot to ask about here. 1-800-684-3110 if you want to talk to us on the air. But I want to remember, so this order came out on August 5th, and now we have the hearing. So just 6 days before the hearing. And it said that the parties should be prepared to address at oral argument the effect of 28 U.S.C. 455 on the district court judge's a petition for en banc review. 28 U.S.C. section 455 is when a judge should be disqualified if they are a party to the proceeding. And so Court of Appeals asked for this to be for the attorneys to be ready to address this.
She tried.
Well, Sidney Powell brought this up in a question from Judge Tittell. Take a listen, and he shuts it down. He didn't want it to be addressed. Here we go.
If we, in fact, unbank the case sua sponte, then does it really make any difference whether Judge Sullivan is a party or has standing?
It does in terms of the disqualification issue, Your Honor. Because
I was
only
asking you about our ability to hear the case unbank.
The court can always take a case sua sponte.
Thank you.
But you see there, the judge, he wanted nothing to do, Dad, with that disqualification issue.
Because
now you can get these orders from one judge, I think, and put forward.
Yes.
So one judge could have this question.
We're waiting for the judge that's going to ask the question. Andy said, hopefully, in this next half of the case, we'll hear it. The 20-minute allotted time has been going more like 40 minutes each side, so it's probably going to go longer. But Andy, I still cannot wrap my head around the fact that the judge is a litigant here, and we're acting like this is okay. We're not acting like it's okay. The court's acting like this is okay.
Jay, it's incredible because, I mean, Judge Sullivan has injected himself as an intervener in the case. He is a party in the case. He didn't like the decision of the panel. He decided to petition and bank. The court granted his petition and bank. What more can you be but a petitioner, an intervener, a litigant in the case than doing and getting that kind of relief? You can't.
You're standing to even do any of this. I mean, that's the
None.
Problem with all of this. So I think, look, at the end of the day, here's what's happening. Hopefully it'll come up. We'll find out about the disqualification issue shortly, and we'll bring it to you if it does. We'll address it. But look, this ends up, to me, it looks like the next stop for this case may well be the Supreme Court of the United States, at which point I think amicus briefs probably will be allowed, and we would probably engage at that point. We've not engaged at this point. But again, the Supreme Court may decide that they're not going to do that. It'll just depend.
Yeah, I mean, there is another question going from – this is a Clinton-appointed judge is happening right now, so we don't have the soundbite for you, but I'm going to tell it for you. He is saying, though, that like when we actually look at precedent, it may very well be that the judge has no role in this
This is Judge Tittell.
Yeah, and this is a Clinton judge. He's saying that under Rule 48, and we could see if we can go to a live – if it makes sense to people, we'll try. Let's hear it. Not yet. We'll see. Yeah, I mean, so he's asking – this would be Judge Sullivan's attorney – really, is there any, he's saying, if I'm reading the tea leaves right, though, is there any leeway for us here when the Department of Justice makes this motion? I mean, why are we not, is there any leeway for the judge,
right,
Judge Sullivan, or then the Court of Appeals to keep
right.
this going? And so we'll see if we have that to people play. I think that's interesting because we're finally starting to see Judge Sullivan's attorney come under some direct questioning, even from more liberal members of the court, about whether or not it's the right role. We could take a call. Let's take Jerry's call from Rhode Island on line two, and I think we can play that for folks. Hey, Jerry, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hello, team. I think Jay just answered it because if it's a 5-5 split or a majority against him, it may go to the Supreme Court in light of Ginsburg's authored 9-0 argument. But did you guys just say one judge can bring up the issue on disqualification?
What Jordan said was that the order that came out could actually be from one judge. So we don't know if it's Eight judges wanted to hear about it, or one. So far, no one's really raised it. It looks like they may be getting into it now. But a 5-5 decision, Jerry, is actually a tie, which would be an affirmance of the 3-judge panel, which ruled in favor of General Flynn. Remember, General Flynn won round one of the appeal here.
Yeah, so that changes things. So a tie, and we're not predicting that would be the case here, but a tie, 5-5, means that at whatever the lower court's decision, that is the decision that stands. So in this case, Mike Flynn would not have to appeal to the Supreme Court. It'd be, I guess, Judge Sullivan making an appeal to the Supreme Court. Now, do we have that sound, guys, this question? This is an interesting exchange because, again, this is another Democrat-nominated judge to Judge Sullivan's attorney, Beth Wilkerson. Take a listen.
Surely you have discretion to deny a Rule 48A motion. Is that included in his? Can he deny it? In other words, even if he has a substantial role, does that role include the discretion to deny the Rule 48A motion? Because if it doesn't, then I don't understand what the purpose of the hearing is going to be.
I think there's very limited discretion to turn or to deny that motion, but there is in the case law examples like the one I believe that I don't remember who first started, but Judge Millett or Judge Pillard used about bribery of the prosecutor. And in Fokker itself, the court recognized there's a presumption of regularity, but that could be overcome, and that could be a basis to deny the motion.
Well, play that out for me then. Let's assume you're right, that there is some discretion to deny the motion. Then what happens?
In this case, it is different from when a prosecution is initiated. If it were denied, there's no role for the executive branch any further because sentencing is the only thing that's left. Now, the government and Mr. Flynn could take the position that they're going to mandamus after that.
A remarkable statement Beth Wilkerson just made.
A defense attorney, too.
A defense attorney who says there would be no role for the prosecutor with regard to a sentencing of the individual defendant who is no longer being prosecuted by the government. This is why, Andy, this is so wrong on so many levels.
This is an unbelievable response.
When you hear those kind of things, it's ridiculous. Yes.
When you hear her say that there is no role for the prosecutor to play when a motion to dismiss is denied, okay? Of course, that's all the role. That is the ultimate role of the prosecutor, to bring criminal charges, and nobody else. And I don't know what she's talking about, but for a criminal defense lawyer to utter those remarks is unbelievable to me.
All right, let me take Linda's call on line one. I know we got a minute and a half here. Linda, welcome to JSEC. You're live. You're on the air.
I don't know much about the judicial system, but I'm wondering if Judge Sullivan has any accountability to anyone, or if he could even be disbarred if he's doing something against
the Constitution. For making, the wrong decision. What he can be is disqualified from the case, which is different. He could recuse himself. That's something you could do voluntarily. I've gotten too complicatedly involved in this. I'm not the right judge, so you can recuse yourself. But there is a way for the court to actually step in and disqualify you. So that's not up to you. That would be about as far as it goes here, is that you're disqualified and you don't get to make the decision. We're making the decision for you. And that is 28 U.S.C. Section 455, because you've become a party to the case. You are now disqualified. That's about as far as it goes. Does it mean I think what he's done is correct? Absolutely not. But I think, to be fair and honest about what you should expect, that's about as far as it would go, as it would then a different judge would take over and likely grant the motion from the Department of Justice, the Rule 48 dismissal motion. We'll be right back on JSECIO Live, taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. Remember, ACLJ's matching challenge, month of August. Double the impact of your donation at ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org. Donate today and double the impact of your donation. We'll be right back.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
All right, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. So as we're live on the air right now, the Mike Flynn case is before the full panel of the D.C. Federal Court of Appeals. It's a 10-judge panel right now. A Trump-nominated judge had recused himself. So you've got a 10-judge panel, leans to the left. But they did ask that they wanted at least one judge, because they put an order out 6 days ago saying the parties need to be ready to address whether this judge is disqualified under 28 U.S.C. Section 455 because he's become a party to the case. Now, we're waiting to see if one of these judges finally asked that question to his attorney. It did not come to either Sidney Powell, who represents Mike Flynn, or to Jeffrey Wall, the deputy SG who represents the Department of Justice. So it would have to be Beth Wilkinson, who is appearing right now. Her phone got disconnected. This is court by phone that we're talking about.
Beth's phone was disconnected?
Just now. This is just like your Supreme Court case. This is court done by conference call. And, I mean, you know, here you got 10 judges asking questions.
Hello. Everybody's asking hello, and they can't. Can we put it up for a second?
It's one of the issues with
sex might involve some favoritism. Do you have a view on that matter?
Are they back now?
Well, I start like you did with the history of the rule, which is quite clear.
Here's the point. The point is we really went to unbelievable lengths, and I want to thank our audio and video team to make sure we didn't have that problem at the Supreme Court. And we're going to show that at some point. I mean, they've already showed it. We actually had video of me arguing it, so we may be able to put that together and show what it was actually like. But look, they're trying to do that. I give these courts credit. They're trying to do the best they can under very unique circumstances. We're going to talk about the situation with General Flynn. I want to talk a little bit about Lebanon as well. But before we do that, let's go ahead and take the call on General Flynn.
Najah calling in from Pennsylvania online too. Najah, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, gentlemen. Thanks for all you do. My question is, at this point in time, is President Trump able to pardon this man?
Constitutional authority to pardon General Flynn if he so desired. So he has the right to do it under the Constitution. I think that the better course right now for General Flynn is to vindicate himself. The Department of Justice said the case should not have been brought. And I know, Than, there's concern among United States senators that the case should not have been brought and that was mishandled. The Department of Justice has said it's mishandled. So the best vindication here would be him being the prosecution withdrawing their charges and the case being dismissed.
Washington field office, as we've said so many times, actually recommended that the case be closed well before we ever got to this point. Who rejected that recommendation? Peter Strzok. And then who was sent over to interview General Flynn down the road? It was Peter Strzok and Joseph Pienka. Who sent them over to do that interview? James Comey. So, Jay, there are just so many steps along the way where this process should have been ended. Of course, it should be ended now. And I think General Flynn deserves a full exoneration and to be vindicated. The pardon is, of course, on the table. Never should have gotten to this point, and he should have his day of vindication.
Well, I don't think it's not right to say the pardon's on the table. There are no pardons on the table. No one's offered a pardon yet to General Flynn. The president has said that, I think he tweeted out once, that he'd be open to it if necessary. But I think everybody wants to see General Flynn and he vindicated here. And vindicated is getting case dismissed.
Well, vindicated in the sense of being allowed to follow, to have the system followed. And the system is that the prosecutor brings the case. And if the prosecutor doesn't want to prosecute, that's the end of it. And certainly if the defendant, as he did in this case, joins in that joint motion to dismiss, then the district judge, in my view, has no alternative under Federal Rule of Criminal Procedure 48 but to dismiss the case. And Judge Sullivan is balking at this. and is becoming a litigant, has become a litigant in the case, and has decided, no, I'm going to dig my heels in.
And I would remind people, too, remember in Roger Stone's matter, he got a commutation from the president. That's because Roger Stone wanted to continue to fight in court to vindicate himself as well. He didn't want a pardon. He got a commuted sentence, but he wanted to keep fighting in court rather than rely on the pardon. And I think in Mike Flynn's case, even a stronger case to keep fighting in court, because the Department of Justice has said, we are dropping the prosecution of you, and they've got a judge who won't sign off on that, which is his role. We'll continue to take your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. And again, remember our matching challenge, aclj.org. Donate today.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
That Logan Seculo reprogram may be taken over to Jay Seculo Live in a day or two for a couple of days.
So here,
Jordan and I will be remote.
We'll be remote. If there's a VP nominee that is actually, if they're right.
We'll call in.
Certainly we'll call in and comment on
I do think that means the next 2 days will be more
lively for everybody. Maybe if you can say it that way.
I love it. I think it's a little, spices it up a little bit. It'll be a lot of fun. All right. Than's there laughing, I see, and I don't know. I can't see Andy, but I'm
sure Logan's been wearing a headband lately.
He's been wearing a headband lately. I think, is that a protest move? And Will's saying yes. He thinks it is. What's he protesting? He's protesting protests. Okay. But then he's protesting. All right. But we're taking your calls on the Flynn matter. Now, we are looking to see, because we're expecting it. Beth Wilkinson's phone got disconnected during the argument. Happens.
It's a good reminder that this is still
COVID.
For even those of you who have gone back to work and you see we're back in the studio, that D.C. and federal courts, for the most part, I mean, they're still all done by phone. So law is being done by conference call right now.
For the most part. Now, Andy, you were in a proceeding on a motion for a new trial hearing in Georgia, and it was televised because it was a big case. And there you were in the courtroom, right?
Courtroom, wearing masks, including the judge. All the witnesses were remote and were in another facility. And the defendant, the prisoner, was being brought in by web cam through at the prison. So we had, excuse me?
How was it? What was your, I just think it'd be interesting for people to know
It was awful. It was terrible. We kept losing witnesses. The judge couldn't hear. We couldn't hear the witnesses. You can't cross-examine them. You keep hearing, hello, can you see that? Well, I can see you, but I can't hear you.
Yeah.
And it was one of the most cumbersome and difficult proceedings.
Yeah, I'd say, you know, it's one thing to do a Zoom call with like 4 or 5 of your colleagues and have some issues. But when you're talking about legal proceedings, this is an actual oral argument. You know, and like in Andy's case, the actual prosecution and motions and witnesses. This is not just like a Zoom call amongst your colleagues or with a potential client. This is the actual legal proceeding.
Yeah.
And they're using these systems that have not yet. I mean, I get it. They weren't prepared. And I think in the future they will be better prepared, but we realize we have great technology. It's been overloaded. I mean, it has been overloaded. Our computers are overloaded. The web is overloaded.
Everybody is.
It makes me nervous, too. We get back to that education issue we've been talking about, that all this virtual learning that may have to be taking place. How is the internet even going to like be able to handle all of this data?
I want to play a question and response regarding from Judge Millett. Patricia Millett is a judge I know very well. And a Democratic appointee, but we did a lot of cases together when she was in the Solicitor General's office on religious liberty. And we'll get into that. But before I do that, I wanted to go to Fan on that, too, because you're doing, not House, but the Senate's been doing it remote. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, in the Senate, it's a little bit more difficult, Jay, because you can't go directly in front of the senators or in front of their staff. We've been doing much the same thing, Zoom, Microsoft Office meetings, virtual meetings, and it worked pretty well. But I can tell you the general sentiment in Washington, D.C. is actually that there's sort of a difference between maybe a Supreme Court hearing where it actually worked pretty well and these criminal proceedings where you do need to have a criminal defendant present. I think maybe that's where, at least among elected officials, maybe where the opinion divide is. It's worked pretty well at the Supreme Court, maybe pretty urgent to get back inside the courtroom when it comes to criminal proceedings.
Yeah, but they're only going to do that when it's safe to do it. So let's go ahead and you want to set this up a little bit?
Yeah, so this is, again, this I think the context here is important. This is about the criticism on the appointment of Judge Gleason. So finally, this issue, this was Judge Sullivan saying, you know what, before I sign off on this motion that you filed, DOJ, to stop the prosecution, that you were wrong, I want to bring in somebody to argue against your position. And he's a former federal judge. So Judge Sullivan's attorney, Beth Wilkinson, gets asked about this from Judge Millett. Take a listen.
Could you respond to the criticism of Judge Sullivan for appointing Judge Gleason in light of the fact that right before the appointment, he had staked out a public position on the matter? How do you respond to that criticism?
In appointing any amicus, the court is looking for the opposite viewpoint from what the two parties agree on, and looking for full adversarial briefing. So the fact that Mr. Gleason announced that he had a position that was adverse to the government and to the defendant makes sense that he would be one of the candidates, because he is being appointed not to be neutral, but to flesh out those legal arguments on the other side of the case. So one wouldn't. You know, the best analogy I know is Professor Paul Cassell, who's quite famous and has, you know, pursued Miranda issues for almost his entire career, asked the Supreme Court to be the amicus and argued against the government, and the court listened and ruled against Mr. Cassell's position, and no one thought it was inappropriate for him, even though it was publicly known that his positions were adverse to the government.
I mean, but the government was arguing their position. So it was just an amicus appointed to argue. That's not the same thing as when the government says, "Uncle, we're not doing this anymore."
I think that they confused the issue over and over.
Any completely different issue there.
Do we have Andy?
We lost him, maybe.
No, I'm here. I understand, and I think so. I think that the putting in of Gleason was just not appropriate, Jay and Jordan, because he was... He's an opinionated person. He made clear that he is anti-Trump. He's made it clear that he is anti-administration. And if you want an adversary, you don't pick somebody who's already made a position clear. You get somebody who's neutral. But beyond that, that is not the job of the judge when the government doesn't want to prosecute a case to say, well, I want someone to come in and argue your position that it is appropriate.
Judge. I think that's where this judge and Beth Wilkinson were just completely wrong, citing some Supreme Court example. That's an appellate court. They bring in amicus all the time to have a position.
This
is a this is the trial judge appointing somebody else.
Also, still had two litigants.
Right, but this is the trial judge appointing somebody to come in and argue a position that the government
is not taking,
and would usually be the government's decision to take or not take. So let's go to we'll go to Renee in Ohio on line one. Renee, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. We're taking your phone calls as we try to analyze this for you. It's extremely complicated, and you know what? It shouldn't be, because there's a rule, 28 U.S.C., Section 455, that says a judge is disqualified if they're party to the case. This judge has an attorney right now arguing before an en banc panel of the D.C. Federal Court of Appeals. He is disqualified. So either way, Judge Sullivan shouldn't be the one ruling on the Rule 48 motion. That should be at least the decision, even from these liberals, is that he's got an attorney arguing for him. He's a party. He's disqualified. Those rules govern them, by the way. They don't get to change those rules. They govern them. But Renee, welcome to the broadcast. You're on the air.
Hi, gentlemen. That is exactly my question. How is this kangaroo court still jumping around like mad? How is this legal? How has this judge not already been kicked out and told to sit down and shut up? How is this still going on?
Well, you know, the three-judge panel did that. They said, you are operating a kangaroo court, Judge Sullivan. Enough of this. But he appealed it. Now, by appealing it, I believe he disqualified himself. Because how can he appeal it? He's then a party, and we have laws. It's not just Jordan Sekulow's opinion. We have U.S. code that says when you become a party as a judge, you are now disqualified. So you can't rule on the motions anymore. You can't be the judge anymore in this case. So the regular three-judge panel did what you said. They said this is like a kangaroo court. What's making me nervous about the current en banc panel that is that they're ignoring this issue constantly. I mean, so far we are like 2.5 hours in to this oral argument that was supposed to be a total of 1 hour, and they are ignoring this issue, even though they said they put out a special order.
I mean, hopefully this is going to come up, the issue that they said, this disqualification issue. I will say that our oral argument in the president's cases were supposed to collectively take 2 hours. We had three cases, they were all kind of joined together. And they took almost four.
Yeah.
Five is what Will's saying? Almost five? Almost 5 hours. So, I mean, there you have it. I mean, it's kind of the way it happens. Let's go ahead and you want to listen to this next one? It's pretty interesting. It talks about the various burdens that are placed on the court.
Yeah, sure. Bite 11.
If the district court grants the motion, then that would be adequate alternate means, would it not?
Well, no, sir, because the process here is the problem. The process is what violates both Article 3 and Article 2. He could have granted or denied the motion months ago, 3 months ago to be precise. But instead, we've had the unconstitutional burden that Cheney talks about being imposed on us by the process he created that he has absolutely no authority to create. All he is entitled to do, even if he'd done it timely, would be to review this motion on its face and grant it.
I think she's 100% correct.
Yes.
I think that's what the rule anticipates.
And if he wanted to take some opposing view that he somehow had the power not to grant it, at least do it then so they can make the appeal and move on. But as Sidney Powell said, for 3 months he's been dragging this out. So that's why it's not just a constitutional remedy to have this judge go back and grant the motion, ha-ha, everything's fine now. Because of what he's done. We'll be right back on Jay Sekulow Live.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
Hey, welcome back to the broadcast, everybody. I want to say something right here at the outset, and that is this. You know, we have a, as you see, we're monitoring a live Court of Appeals argument right now, and we're coming to you, those of you hearing us live, we're live. For an hour on radio and television, on social media platforms, Facebook, Periscope, other ways you can see it, aclj.org. And I just want to say something about our production teams. They're actually pulling down this feed while we're doing this so that we can give you analysis actually as it's happening. Now, they've had a little of production snafu on the court's end, not intentional, obviously, and that was the whole issue of the, her, I think Judge Beth Wilkinson's phone got disconnected. They had to reconnect, which was what we were all afraid of and fearing during those Supreme Court arguments, to be quite frank. But I think what's important here is what I'm trying to share to you is if you enjoy this broadcast and support the work that we're doing and the information we're getting out, there are a lot. You seem right now in the studio, me and Jordan, you hear fans up there in Washington. We could go to fan and you see fans there in Washington, D.C. right now. And then we have Andy is by phone in Georgia. He'll be back in the studio next month. What I'm telling you is that's all you're seeing. And sometimes you'll have Harry and Wes here, so you'll have five people here. There are at least that many more behind a big glass window where the production team is to put this together. There's many people that are producing this broadcast as produce most programs you're seeing on national cable. And the reason we do that is we want to have a great product for you and great information that we can give you out. And our content teams are working on all kinds of new content right now. So you've got this broadcast, Jay Sekulow Live. You've got a weekend version of this broadcast. You have these shorts that Jordan does. Logan and Will host a program called Logan Sekulow Program, The Reprogram. That is sometimes, it's heard on various networks. It's a podcast. Some days they do it right here on our radio broadcast. We're doing all of this. Your support of the ACLJ makes that possible. Now, we're in a matching challenge this month. I want to encourage you, if you enjoy this broadcast, and millions of you listen to this, and tens of thousands of you watch this, go to aclj.org if you're able. Make a donation in any amount if you are able to support the work of the ACLJ. That's all I wanted to say to start this last segment off.
All right, folks, we're going to take your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. You say you want to go right to this? Let's go. Let's go right to the hearing.
So where we have here an unopposed motion to dismiss, what interest does the district judge have in continuing to scrutinize the dismissal of a prosecution? What is the district judge seeking to vindicate on rehearing and with the inquiries that, you know, have been represented will be made below?
The rehearing, Your Honor, is meant to protect the process and the mandamus standard, because under the panel's decision, although written to be fact-specific, could open the floodgates to other people who are unhappy with a district court not ruling on a motion, thinking that they know what the answer should be, that the answer is clear from the case law or the precedent, and moving to mandamus a district court whenever they think they're in that position. So it's broader than just this particular Rule 48A issue.
But so a district judge has a right to litigate on behalf of legal standards generally? Does that make him a party to this case? Does it make him a freewheeling amicus? I mean, what precisely is the judge's interest in this? Any more than there would be in any case where the panel issues an opinion where a district judge may disagree with the Court of Appeals legal analysis.
He doesn't have a right to litigate or is not a party, Your Honor. This court made him a respondent. What that means for purpose of mandamus, I don't think is totally clear, but the court ordered him to respond.
This court did not order him to respond. He appealed. He appealed. Now, remember, you had the writ of mandamus. He then appointed his own attorney. He didn't like the Court of Appeals decision, the three-judge panel, and he appealed en banc. So the court has made him a party. I mean, I don't really know which way Beth Wilkinson wants to cut it. That it doesn't really matter to me. The way the statute reads doesn't say if the court makes you a party, if you yourself made yourself a party. It says if you're a party, you're disqualified.
Well, of course.
So I don't care about her reasoning, her bizarre reasoning there.
But that was a little bit of a bizarre way of getting there. But at the end result, Jordan's exactly right. It's the same thing.
She just said it.
She just said it. He's a party. How he became a party was really his own actions, but he's a party. Thus,
he is a party.
He has to be disqualified at a minimum.
Well, she made the admission. She confessed the fact that he is a respondent in the case, whether he was made a respondent in the case by the appellate tribunal or whether he did it himself is immaterial. And I don't think he was made a respondent by the appellate court. He made himself a petitioner and an intervener and a litigant. Well, that falls squarely within the prohibition of 28 U.S.C. 455. You're a litigant. You can't be part of the process. You cannot be the judge and the litigant at the same time. This is not appropriate under the law.
So, again, there's the question. The question finally did come.
I think they're doing it right now again, aren't they?
Is it continue the back and forth? We'll check that monitor. Is it continuing as we speak, right? Should we go to it live, guys?
Let's make the call.
I think it was Judge Rao, too.
Yeah, it was Judge Rao that's still asking the questions.
No, okay.
All right, let me go to Fan Bennett, and that is on this. All right, where are we on now we've got the executive orders to provide assistance to Americans that need help. Where are we congressionally?
Yeah, on that issue, Jay, still at a loggerheads between the House and the Senate on what the final package should be. Essentially, Jay, Speaker Pelosi wants things that were far beyond the CARES Act, not directly related to the COVID stimulus. I will tell you this, though. I do think they're going to get there. I think the president has done what he can through executive action. Eventually, you're going to need legislation to get to things like PPP and then the school funding that Jordan mentioned earlier. I quite frankly think that might be the most urgent matter because school is back upon us. Jay, I think we will get to a deal in a couple of weeks. But in the meantime, the delay that is caused by Speaker Pelosi's refusal to negotiate, Jay, that does cause very real problems across America. Here in Washington, D.C., they might feel insulated from it, but the delay in this instance is increasing the harm.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. It is increasing the harm, and hopefully we're going to get Congress to act mature here and get a result.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, though, as the clock keeps ticking and ticking and becoming closer and closer to Election Day, you get closer and closer to Labor Day when you get more and more focused on politics. But you know what? Even though usually you would not get major pieces of legislation like this done this close to a presidential election, we are not in a usual time. We're in a pandemic. Schools are trying to reopen. We don't know if it will work. For most part, you know, it will take a couple of weeks to know if it causes some major COVID outbreaks or not. We just don't know. We're trying to assist families all across the country right now. I'm just getting emails on that right now as we speak. I mean, over 1,500 families have contacted the ACLJ for assistance. And it's moving targets because the schools are having to constantly change policies as well. Now, some are doing it in the best interest of their students. Some are not. Some are being controlled by teachers' unions and not.
But you're getting some help, too. You're getting cooperation. I've been on a couple of those calls with you.
Yes, yes.
Where people really are trying to help their people.
There are people that are trying to help, and that's what we're trying to do.
School superintendents that are trying to make them do the right thing.
That's right. And it's the moving targets for everybody. So Congress needs to get its act together and get PPP done. So that, again, it's nonpartisan. Who gets those loans? It shouldn't matter what political party they are. Support the work of the ACLJ if you can. Double the impact your donation at aclj.org. We're able to bring you this broadcast every day, break all this down for you every day because of that support as well. ACLJ.org. Donate today. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at ACLJ.org.